This weekend starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Even the experts don't know. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Scientists are still trying to understand the new coronavirus, which causes the disease COVID-19. Their frustration is that basic questions can't be fully answered.
From the tech world, three things that may result in a better post-pandemic world, including 3D printing.
An Illinois man has only been allowed to visit his pregnant wife in person once since she entered the hospital last month. Here, the creative ways he holds date nights.
And how to turn dreaded household chores into moments of meditation.
There are meditation experts out there who suggest trying to find ways to practice mindfulness in your everyday activities. And cleaning offers this opportunity to do that because you put down your phone and you are doing a task that requires light concentration.
Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Byron on taking advantage of chores that require gentle concentration. In this coronavirus pandemic, we're swimming in statistics, right? Trends, models, projections, infection rates and death tolls, but even the professionals interpreting the data are struggling to make sense of the numbers. It's a story by Joel Achenbach, science writer at The Washington Post. Joel, what do we want to know most urgently?
So right now what we want to know is what's safe, what's not safe. Where can we go? Like, can we plan a trip? What are we going to do this summer? I think the smart move is to wear masks when you're close to people and can't social distance. But we're at this moment in the pandemic in which there are these questions that are still debated. How lethal is it really?
Yeah.
We know that it can kill people. It can kill a lot of people. But there are people who say, oh, no, it's not bad. It's not that much worse than the flu. My article explains why it is clearly much worse than the flu. But, you know, there's a big age gradient. It depends on who you are, where you are, and how old you are. And do you have an underlying condition? So the one thing that we try to emphasize in this piece is that there's always some uncertainty and there's some wobbliness to scientific data early in a pandemic like this where you're not going to be able to get the absolute answer on things. There's a range of answers,
yeah.
And people need to understand that that's kind of normal for science. What isn't normal is, because this is a crisis atmosphere, every time a new paper comes out that says, well, the virus is floating in the air, or the virus, you know, is or is not contagious from a surface, we all pounce on it and write about it and give it all this coverage. And sometimes lost in the shuffle is the nuances of it.
To your point, I was reading an email today from a local principal or superintendent where I am in, you know, middle part of New Jersey, and he submitted 91 questions, I think it was, that need to be answered right now for school planners, because he's saying, we start the planning for next year now, and here are at least 91 questions we don't have answers to. And I think that's the frustrating thing. There's just, everything's just unknown.
Well, so if you're a school principal, I mean, you have a lot of pressure on you to basically say, this is safe to do. And the scientists are not going to be able to absolutely give you the assurance and the certainty that you crave. Well, we all crave certainty about things. Well, let's just think about the basic issue of what's my risk factor. Okay, so I'm 59 years old, right? And I'm in pretty good health. Okay, but if you look at the numbers, they say, well, the risk of a bad outcome goes up starting at 60. Okay, so does that mean I have about 6 months left until my risk factor goes up? Probably not. It's all a sliding scale. You know, what about the issue of contagiousness. I mean, exactly how does it spread? When I see my friends and we sit in my backyard and we keep our distance from each other, I think that's safe, you know, because we're being careful. But, you know, you make a little mistake, you touch the same thing, you know, we keep the hand sanitizer there. We're being prudent, but, you know, do we need to be more careful or are we overreacting? I mean, is that too much? You know, again, infection control, go figure. It's not so much that it's not scientifically understood. It's that the kind of parameters of it are not exactly known.
We're speaking with Joel Achenbach, science writer at The Washington Post. His piece is called "Even Experts Struggle with Coronavirus Unknowns." I wonder if we might actually have a vaccine before we have all the answers we might want or need.
Well, yeah, we certainly would need a vaccine as soon as possible. And the vaccine will have to, the tricky thing about that is that you might come up with a vaccine that usually works, but people have a low tolerance for vaccines that, you know, might be dangerous, for example, even if it's only 1 out of 1,000 people have a bad reaction.
Yeah.
So that's a situation where the science needs to get it exactly right. Now, you know, vaccine safety is a huge issue. And, right now, here's where we are as a country. We're trying to limit the spread of the virus. And the reason is that with only probably 5% of the country currently exposed to it, we already have had about 100,000 deaths. So you don't want to go to 80% of the country exposed to it if you don't have a vaccine yet and you don't have a proven therapeutic.
Thanks, Joel. Joel Achenbach, science writer at The Washington Post. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Final weekend of May. Glad you're with us. Many of us are struggling to answer pandemic-related questions like, do I feel comfortable letting my kid take a socially distanced bike ride? Can my child use a public restroom? Are we still wiping down groceries? Lots of couples, and ex-couples for that matter, disagree over their comfort levels for different kinds of activities. But it's impossible to find the right answer since there's so much scientists still don't know. Jessica Gross is lead editor of Parenting at the New York Times. She's been exploring the questions with experts. Jessica, what are parents going through?
It is a real point of conflict among parents, how they will live their lives in our new reality. So really, everyday choices, like, is the kid allowed to use a public restroom when we're out at the park? You know, are we sending our kids to camp this summer if it does indeed open? Those things where you used to just do them pretty without a second thought, couples are really having it out over what their choices are going to be. And it's quite difficult because, as we know, there's so much we don't know about the virus. And so it's really hard to know what the right answer is.
Yeah, especially since it's over health, not money, right, or family or something like that. I mean, some serious consequences here. Who's saying what? Talk to families that really seem to be struggling or going at each other?
Yeah, well, you know, it's really a psychiatrist I spoke to described it as a Rorschach test. So a lot of times the argument over the risk is not actually about the risk. Mm. It might be bringing up things about your past. It might be bringing up old fights that you had. It might be bringing up dynamics that you had. So there was one couple I spoke to where the husband was a real introvert and he's kind of thriving during this moment and so doesn't see the need to sort of do any behaviors that to him seem risky, where the wife has more of the childcare responsibilities and really has more of a need for outside contact. And so that sort of introvert-extrovert conflict, which probably plays out in different ways when you're not in the middle of a pandemic, that's how it's playing out in this moment.
I think you referenced it, too, in your story when you said sometimes, you know, you can go back and see what maybe your parents did in a situation like this, but there's not been a situation like this, so there's no handbook to refer to.
Absolutely. And because for many, it feels like a life and death situation. It's not just something that you can agree to disagree about. Mm-hmm. And so the advice that I think is really helpful, or at least helped me in terms of, you know, thinking through choices that my family needs to make in the coming months, get drill down as much as possible as to what is up for discussion. So the child care question is a huge question for so many families. And so you have to, the just child care writ large, that's not a question. The questions to ask are when, under what circumstances, and is it never until there's a vaccine or until we have more information? So for example, if let's say you think that you want to send the kids back to daycare or bring a nanny into the home and your partner is wary, doesn't want to do it, ask them, you know, do you need two more weeks, 2 more months? How much more information do you need to possibly feel comfortable with this? Or is it you will never feel comfortable with this until there's a vaccine? And if the latter is the answer, you know, really talk about what the other drawbacks are. So if, you know, the person who wants to send the kids back to daycare, school, whatever, is the person who also has to do all of the child care, maybe the person who is reluctant to send the kids back, they will agree, you know, I'll take more breaks from work, I'll, you know, contribute in X, Y, and Z ways. So it has to be sort of a real conversation and really drilling down to specifically what the questions are that you're trying to answer.
We're speaking with Jessica Gross, lead editor of the parenting section at the New York Times. She's got a piece called A New Thing to Fight About, Virus Risks. It's difficult, I guess, and complicated too, because it seems to be a moving target, right? We've got shifting metrics, it seems, week to week, if not day to day.
Yes, there are shifting metrics. A lot has to do with where you are geographically. I mean, there's places in the United States where they have had very, very few cases, and then the calculus might be really different than if you live in New York City, as I do. So scientists, there's so much that they don't know yet about this virus because it is so new. And so we're constantly learning more. We're learning there might be different sort of choices that you can make for kids than you might want to make for adults as we learn more about the virus and how it affects children.
Thanks, Jessica. Jessica Gross, lead editor of the parenting section at the New York Times. It's 22 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Meditation teachers and cleaning product makers say that sink full of dirty dishes, towering pile of laundry, and smudged window could be your path to mindfulness. This weekend's Jennifer Koshenka has details on how to turn household chores into meditation.
If you need to get your mind off your worries, you might want to consider doing more household chores. As Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal tells us, cleaning that requires a bit of concentration may steer your mind away from stress. Ellen, why does washing dirty dishes or vacuuming actually calm us?
Well, there are meditation experts out there who suggest trying to find ways to practice mindfulness in your everyday activities, and cleaning offers this opportunity to do that because you put down your phone and you are doing a task that requires light concentration. And so there are people who suggest you do this and try to just focus the mind on the task at hand rather than think about what might have happened in the past or what will happen in the future. Just be completely present with the task of, let's say, washing dishes.
Ellen, are we not stressed out from being home all the time and seeing these chores right before our eyes?
Yes. And so that is one reason why people suggest doing this, because if you have to do it anyway, you may as well try to make it feel better. And so this is one way that you can do that. And I did talk to a psychologist about whether or not there was, you know, some validity to all of these claims. And a psychologist at the Mayo Clinic said that, yeah, this can relax your body. It can calm your brain. And it also gives you a sense of accomplishment when that job is done. And amid all this uncertainty that's going on in the pandemic, this is something tangible that you can control and finish. And that can eventually help build up your resiliency and give yourself a buffer against all these stressors around you.
We're speaking with Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal. You just mentioned having something that you have control over. We've done some stories recently about people going a little crazy buying stuff online they don't need just because they have control over the shopping experience. This seems to be something more positive.
Yeah, and a lot more cost friendly. I mean, if you have to vacuum anyway, why not try to kill two birds with one stone and get that vacuuming done? But also, if you're thinking about the motion of your body and that back and forth flow you get going, you know, maybe it can also help calm you.
Ellen, your story mentions a number of marketers that are also trying to steer us a bit in this direction. Talk about that.
Well, of course. There are many cleaning products out there that try to claim that not only will they clean your home, but they'll also provide you with self-care. And so that's one of the reasons why cleaning product companies love putting really high-end fragrances or complex fragrances in their products to make the whole act seem to feel a little bit better and give you that idea that you're taking care of yourself as well as your home. But I spoke with some scientists at Procter & Gamble, and Swiffer actually has a new campaign, and that claims that the Clean 15 method by Swiffer pledges that it can offer a clean home and a clear mind. And it gives you tips, like there's a guide that suggests you apply a facial treatment to yourself and then clean the floor with a Swiffer. Or as you're dusting with a Swiffer duster, you can give your surfaces a little TLC while you catch up on the phone with your family or a therapist. And so it's, again, that idea that these little short cleaning tasks can also be a way to make yourself feel better.
How about that? Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Byron with this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Even in tough times, you want to try to look your best, even if it's just from the waist up for those video chats. So when it comes to your facial hair, Harry's has you covered, bringing you incredibly high-quality blades at factory direct prices, just $2 per blade. Now, when it comes to my facial hair, I'm typically a goatee guy, but lately I've been using these times of home quarantine to experiment with a full beard. This has allowed the precision trimmer blade on my Harry's razor to take center stage. I use it to make sure my new beard is looking its best. Now, you can keep your face looking smooth, too, or your beard looking clean with a Harry's trial set delivered right to your doorstep. Just go to harrys.com/Gordon to order yours. And get this, to help support those who need it the most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the U.S. so you can feel good about looking good. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving better today. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka coming up this half hour. How to financially look forward during pandemic restrictions. Plus, hiding your on-screen double chin on Zoom. And the man creating date nights outside of his pregnant wife's hospital window. That story in about 20 minutes. From the tech world, there are three things that may result in a better post-pandemic world. One is video conferencing. Another is robotics, which is getting a ton of attention right now. And a third is 3D printing. Here's what to watch for from Rob Enderle, founder of The Enderle Group. Rob, your take.
First thing I picked was video conferencing and virtual conferences. I mean, we're being asked to work at home, and now we're discovering all the shortfalls of video conferencing tools. This is a technology I've followed since the mid-60s, when it first came to market at Disney World after the World Fair in New York. And the promise then was this was going to be the standard way of doing calls, and it wasn't. And of course, it wasn't until I think the 1980s when we next had a pop-up where we're going to try to do it, deployed it inside companies. In fact, the trial I was involved with was with Apple, and the employees were so convinced that their CEO was spying on them that they taken their Apple hats and put them over all the cameras on their desktops and refused to use them. So that didn't work. And then we advanced through the 70s and stuff. It was very hard to use and didn't interoperate. We got into the 80s and we had we were in the 90s, didn't operate and created problems. We got the 2000s and then we had things like FaceTime pop up, but FaceTime only worked on Apple. So it was just very odd to me that at this particular point in time, since we kind of figured out that phones needed to work with other phones, we didn't figure out that teleconferencing systems needed to work with other teleconferencing systems. And now, because of this critical need, we're now starting to drive in interoperability, so one system can contact another. And, of course, we had Zoom pop up out of nowhere and kind of take the entire industry by storm just by making stuff easy and by not being tied to a particular platform. Now there's just a ton of work going on.
Got it. We're speaking with Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. We're talking about a piece he's written for Tech News World entitled Three Improvements the COVID-19 Pandemic May Force. Sorry, so you referenced these video conferences. Also tossed in there, reconsidering robotics.
Yeah, because a lot of the issue with regard to this COVID event is that some of the people that you absolutely need are at the forefront of the event. In other words, they're most at risk of getting sick, whether that's first responders, could be receptionists, but it's the people that you have that are facing other people, because that's how you're going to catch the disease, and it's people that can't work remote. But today we could actually replace living people with robots that are remotely controlled by those people. And so now suddenly, rather than waiting for autonomy to raise its wonderful head and for full replacement, there are shortcuts that we can take where we can use robots, much like we use robots to disarm bombs today. Those aren't, autonomous vehicles. Those are controlled remotely by a specialist who then goes in and deals with the bomb from a safe distance. Mm. And if it goes up, it takes out the robot, but it doesn't take out the employee. So that kind of effort has really stepped up. And we're certainly seeing the factories that are highly automated, where the workers are at least partially spread, are doing far better than, say, packing plants.
Finish up with 3D printing.
Well, 3D printing really comes down to, and 3D printing is designed to kind of revolutionize manufacturing. And if you think of a big manufacturing plant, in a way, it's just a 3D printer with people in it right now. If you take those people out and you had a manufacturing plant where raw materials came in, well, 3D printers are being seen as a way to reduce substantially the incidence of infection, because what a 3D printer does, rather than having to deal with a long logistics chain, any one of which could be infected, they manufacture the part right there on site from raw materials, thus reducing the number of people that have to interact with that particular component and reducing the potential for that infection to spread into the plant. And so it's really providing a way for 3D printers to have another reason to justify their existence, and that they're a far safer technology than other forms of supply.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. It's 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. It's been an unhappy few months, right? Stepping outside means risking your health. One out of six U.S. workers is unemployed or soon will be. The stock market has suffered. Feeling glum? Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com says one of his abiding interests is happiness research, and that research offers ideas that can make our current situation a little cheerier. But how? Jonathan set this up.
So this has been a pretty rough period for a lot of people. They're stuck at home. They might be out of work. Obviously, the stock market has gone down a lot, though it's also recovered a lot. And, maybe more than anything else, people are concerned about their health. And in the middle of this, beyond these not being great things to have to live with, one of the things that we've lost during this stay-at-home period is the pleasure of anticipation. you know, because we're nervous about getting on an airplane, because we're nervous about, you know, going to the beach or going to restaurants, and these things may not even be allowed, depending on where we live, we don't have the pleasure of anticipation. So my notion with this particular article was, let's see if there are ways that we can get that pleasure of anticipation back into our lives.
All right, so you said make two lists, two wish lists, and they should include what?
So the two wish lists would be things that you can do today and things that you can do once the pandemic is over. So for today, obviously the list is going to be more limited, but it might be, you know, items you might want to order online or restaurants you might want to order from or walks you want to take in your neighborhood. The idea is to have a list of things that you can look forward to, because one of the things that we know is that anticipation is actually often the best part of any particular experience or any particular possession that you end up buying. Meanwhile, think about having a second wish list, and this would be your wish list for your post-pandemic life. You can start to think about people you'd like to see performing in concert or places that you would like to visit once you're comfortable getting on an airplane. You might create this wish list, go online, do a little research, maybe talk to friends or family members who might accompany you. This creates the pleasure of anticipation, and moreover, you know, doing all of this, it costs nothing.
Yeah.
And in fact, in your head, you can visit all kinds of wonderful places, see all of your favorite performers in concert at no expense.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clemens. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. You also said, too, which I thought was interesting, how can we ensure an eagerly anticipated event lives up to its billing?
Yeah, this is an interesting issue. And one of the things that the research tells us is that if we focus on the positive aspects of any particular experience, and if we put ourselves on sensory high alert, so we take in all the details, the taste of the food, you know, the beauty of the area that we visit, whatever it is, we can make that special event even more special. And meanwhile, we also should try not to detract from the event. And so, you know, you don't want to be checking your email while you're with your friends, because you're going to get that irritating email from your colleague and it's going to put you in a bad mood. You also, whenever you have an experience or you have a possession, you should try to avoid social comparisons. Because if we start to compare what we're enjoying with what other people around us are enjoying, there's a chance that whatever they've got looks a whole lot better, and suddenly you don't feel nearly so good about the possession you just bought or the experience that you're having.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clemens at HumbleDollar.com. It is 13 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. More than 2 months into coronavirus lockdowns, video conferencing has taken hold in most workplaces, and that could endure if companies allow employees to work from home forever. For many people, that means figuring out what to do about the 10 pounds that webcams tend to add under the chin. It's a story by Patience Hagen, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Patience, what have you found?
I found it's not just me. I found out almost everyone sees that double chin. You know, if you look down at a camera like we so often do when we're talking on video calls, all of the fat just comes out of hiding.
And that's, as somebody in your story said, that's pretty much for everybody, like even a child.
Absolutely.
The different techniques that you can use to try to hide the double chin on camera are what?
Okay. One of the classics is simply elevating the camera. You want the camera like eye level or above. If it's looking down on you, that chin is going to just disappear, and you might just look slimmer in general. Other interesting techniques are using tape on the back of your neck to kind of pull the skin back. Other people grow a beard. For some people, that works. For some people, it doesn't. If you see it mid-call and it's too late to do any of those things, put your fist in front of your chin and just look like you're thinking really hard. That can hide it.
So I was going to ask you about the tape, because that was at the tail end of your story. How does the tape trick actually work? Where does the tape go? You got to use clear tape, I guess?
You can do it even with non-clear tape, because if you put it in the back, as some people do. Some people stretch the skin back and put it back there. There's even tape that's designed specifically for the purpose. One brand is called Nexi, and they make tape that's designed to not be too damaging and stretching out to your skin.
Wow. I was surprised, well, maybe not surprised, but this doctor in New York who is suddenly, what, his phone is ringing off the hook because people want to explore getting rid of their double chins.
Exactly. Absolutely. I've heard this from several plastic surgeons all around the country that they're getting a lot more inquiries about double chin specifically and more generally about various imperfections around the face and neck. You know, now that people are at home, they're actually on camera all day, staring at their face all day, and they're seeing all these unflattering things. It's really making more people think about plastic surgery.
Jeez. We're speaking with Patience Hagen, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Next in Video Conferencing, Hiding Your On-Screen Double Chin. Are more people finding out or at least admitting that they're more vain than they thought?
Yes, absolutely. That's what I'm learning from reporting this story. Everyone's like, I thought it was just me, and everyone's saying, like, wow, I didn't think something like this would bother me that much.
You referenced in your story, like, the 10 pounds that a camera might add. Is that really a thing, or is that our justification for the way we might look?
I'd say it's the angle, you know. Where most of us are not really experts at posing and angling these shots, and once we have to do it from home, it's like a big wake-up call when you realize you can look that bad from below.
Thanks, Patience. Patience Hagen, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 7 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. There's nothing like a thoughtful date night to show someone that you care. And one man is raising the bar for husbands everywhere. While Shona Muller has been on bed rest in the hospital for weeks as she and husband Bob Conlon await the birth of their first child, the dad-to-be has gone the extra mile to make his wife feel special by hosting date nights outside of her window. Fox News says Ms. Muller was admitted to a hospital in Hinsdale, Illinois on April 13, and Mr. Conlon was not allowed to accompany her amid the coronavirus health crisis. She needs to be there for the duration of her pregnancy now. He's been able to visit her in person once. In addition to frequent FaceTime calls and Zoom calls, the couple began writing sweet notes to each other through the window, and Mr. Conlon sent treats up to his wife's room. On one occasion, he sent delivery from a favorite restaurant and set up a table with a rose and candles outside her window where he sat. The due date, by the way, is August 10, but the expected arrival is end of June for their baby boy. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.